Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, welcome and encourage you to subscribe and tell others if you're enjoying our podcast. This week, we have as our guest, Melissa Pickering. She is a product executive with over 18 years of experience in building products and product teams across CPG, ed tech, and the med tech industries. She's the VP of product at Willow Innovations. And she began her career as an engineer at Disney Imagineering, and she later went on to be an executive at the Lego Group in Denmark, where she spent time building and leading product innovation teams. And she has shared her purpose-driven product beliefs on the TEDx stage and also is a podcast host. Looking forward to today's conversation with Melissa. Well, can you give us, I guess, first off, a little bit of your career story and a little bit of your history?
Yeah, for sure. So I have over 15 years experience in product development across a few sectors, ed tech, med tech, and CPG, so consumer packaged goods. And then within those sectors, I've built and led teams both on a small scale and sort of larger scale. So within early to mid stage startup, as well as larger international corporation. So spent almost 7 years at the Lego Group out in Denmark. So I also have a stint in the nonprofit sector. So I have a good sense of the different ways that different types of organizations work and operate and how to drive innovation within those. I guess the second point there is the types of products I've been working on are all have digital physical in nature. So essentially a physical product with a layer of technology. So imagine like a toy Lego brick with a sort of a connected app or experience in that light. So in these experiences I've used to drive innovation in some way. So whether that's innovation in a new category, so like ed tech or fintech, or to evolve a brand, which is a lot of the work that we did when I was at Lego. Right now at Willow, I have a product team that's looking at how we're using a connected experience. So this is the app that moms have with a wearable breast pump and how we can evolve our business model using that experience. So it's been a varied journey. And it's something I wouldn't have guessed when I started out as a mechanical engineer at Disney all those years ago. An Imagineer, if you will. So.
Sure. Very cool. Well, I know my grandkids would love the Lego story and kind of how you developed it. So I have to ask, so do you still have some Legos around?
Yeah, I still do. Had to actually leave quite a few in Denmark, but still have some. We actually have a Lego. They have these new experiences that are like paint by number, but they're built by number. So it's a painting. A paint-like structure on our wall here. That's what I'm looking at. So
very cool. Very cool. So I like to ask this question of most every guest. If you were able to spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old Melissa, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give her?
Yeah, I think I would say be more patient, I think, with myself and evolution of my career. I think early on, I was pretty anxious to have more scope and get to the next challenge and promotion and didn't really necessarily appreciate the tools that I was developing to put in my toolbox that's, you know, of course, needed to grow in my career. I now, of course, do and also have figured out how to channel my impatience in ways that are effective for different roles that I've had.
Any advice you received early on that you should have ignored?
Yeah, maybe the expectation of the linearity of career and life. I think, 5 and 10 year plans often go out the window. And I think, you know, having clarity around what your own personal goal is and staying true to that and not sort of trying to fit into what others you think others want or expect. So that, you know, there's always curveballs in life and work. So I think that and typically creates a nonlinear path, which also works out.
Sure. So when you're thinking about kind of a role that you've mm-hmm. taken on, it could be a past role. And I think we talked a little bit in a previous, when we connected about shaping a role kind of to maybe more to your strengths. You get a job description and it has a list of all this stuff, but you know, I think everybody's different in kind of how they work and how can they utilize their strengths as far as in a role. Can you talk a little bit about that, of how you've done that in your career?
Yes, for sure. I think early on, you're sort of fitting into, as you said, a job description. And then, you know, companies evolve, there's usually restructures. And I think later on, down the line, I realized I could look at how to shape my role to also not only fit my strength, but also fit what the business needs. I think, you know, we live what's called a VUCA world, volatile, and I can't remember the words of the acronym, but it's a basically ever-changing world and businesses need to evolve. And so roles shift oftentimes. And I think being proactive in that conversation with my sort of leaders and stakeholders around of not only what my strengths are, but then that I'm using my hands to show a Venn diagram, but then how that overlaps with what the business needs. Is something that I would impart on any advice on any new leader.
So think back to that first time that you went from kind of more of that individual contributor role to leading a group. Talk about what you wish you've known earlier as far as in being a new leader that you think would be helpful for somebody that's listening that's maybe in their first leadership role.
Yes, I think... really looking at the strengths of each individual and adjusting, finding ways to adjust your leadership to best lead that individual. I think it's technical situational leadership. And I think early on, I didn't know how to do that while still being authentic, because I'm like, well, I am who I am and this is how I lead. But there are tweaks that you can make if somebody needs to be more coached versus directed, and having that in the back of your mind on how to make those adjustments. And you can still do that while being authentic to who you are as a leader.
Yeah, that's good. So you've been in different size organizations. You are in a large organization. You've moved into more of an entrepreneurial type environment that's growing and expanding. Talk about just the differences as far as in how that you operate in your environment now versus when you were at Lego, a larger organization, and kind of how do you need to pivot as a leader?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question and something I think about a lot. I think there's in a larger organization, there's a lot more focus on stakeholder management and sort of alignment across different pre-meetings and thinking through different frameworks and you know, even visuals or sort of written documents to help drive sort of alignment or change across organization. And those I think are really valuable tool sets to have and it works, right? And as if you have the right focus and the patience to do that. I think in a smaller organization, you don't need to have as many pre-meetings. Sure. Yep. But I do think some of the frameworks and tools and ability to clearly communicate are still utilized, for example, with our board, right? And with potential investors. So those are helpful to use in a different context within a smaller organization. But certainly there's more just go do in a smaller organization and being comfortable with operating at different altitude levels and knowing when to kind of dive deep as well as elevate up and having the resilience to deal with that context switching quite a bit.
New leaders are always I think one of the things that maybe they haven't had experience is working with a board, at least presenting to a board. What are some things that you've learned as far as I know I think when we talked the other day, you were putting together a presentation for board. What have you learned in your time working with a board and presenting?
Yeah, I think they're back to the altitude levels. It's you need to recognize that they're at the high altitude level and be able to level up the details that you're in day to day to obviously the board that's not, they don't have a lot of time. I think thinking in bullet points, thinking in our CEO shares a great tip, the pyramid principle. So what is the key message you want to get across and what are a couple of clear data points to support that message to be armed with when there's questions? So those are some tips and something I've even been thinking about the last couple of days as we're actually meeting tomorrow. So that's going to be super helpful and knowing the numbers, I think in the day being able to have those data points on hand, not necessarily share them all, but know that they're you have them in your back pocket when questions are asked.
So I know there's a lot of different working environments today that there weren't even just a few years ago, that there's hybrid models, there's some that are still pretty much virtual. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about kind of how you've adapted your style as far as a leadership just with your team. Are you virtual or are you kind of a mixture of?
We are primarily remote. The engineers are in the lab for 3 days a week, but most of my own team is remote. And I must say it's been tough for sure in terms of adapting my leadership style. I think it's using the same techniques of stopping by somebody's desk or whatever, just to be present and allow for that casual conversation, but in a way that's different. So random Slack messages, for example, or quick, random Zoom chats. It's using, I guess, different tools to try and create that same casual and sense of presence, I would say.
Good. So I know every leader wants to stay current on what's going on as far as in the industry, as well as other leadership skills they can develop. Any leadership books that you've read that you recommend to other leaders?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're sort of the, on Obama's list this year. So I don't know if they're late, sure. But they're good old standbys that I love and actually just recently reread. Two of them. One is The Power of Moments by the Heath Brothers. And this is a book that's more oriented around experiences and that I share with product leaders, but honestly can be utilized in other functions and thinking about how to build cultures. It basically highlights the emotions that we all experience and how to bring in how we remember those emotions and therefore experiences. So it can be applied. And when you're thinking about, creating an environment with your teams, as well as product experiences. The second one is Powerful by Patty McLeod. She was an HR leader at Netflix, and she has a really, I would say, thoughtful and pragmatic approach to leading people as businesses evolves and also managing tough situations like layoffs and restructures. And I found that one, particularly in the last year, to be very useful as a reread.
Great. Yeah, I think both of those are new to our list. That's
good.
Yeah. So any favorite quotes that you refer to?
Yes. So I have two here as well. The first one is, it's a Jeff Bezos quote. It's related to decision-making. And that's more of a question. Is this a one-way door decision or two-way door decision? And I like to use that when my teams are up against, a challenge and don't really know which way to go. And it can be fairly paralyzing if you're sort of thinking about needing to make a decision. You usually don't have all the information you need. That's just the world we live in. So remembering that, rarely are decisions sort of one-way door, basically final. You can't go back through. So encouraging them to think through, you know, what are the trade-offs and implications of, you know, the, if you make the decision and have to go back through, just to keep things moving. The other is a little bit more simple and inspired from my time at Lego. We would reference our building and play experiences as hard fun. And I think that can be applied in the workspace as well. It's really about finding the flow, you know, when you're adequately challenged and also feel, you know, proud of the work you're doing. And that's a really rewarding feeling. And so I like thinking about some of the experiences we have at work as being hard fun.
Well, I wasn't going to ask this question, but going back to Lego, I'm just kind of fascinated by that. Maybe it's from childhood, but how did they come up with new ideas and concepts around the product? Was it getting a room, figuring out what works with kids? How did they figure that out?
Yeah. So it's even more fun than that. I think insight driven. So watching kids play and understanding how they play. So we would do, you know, a number of longitudinal studies following families. We would have kids within come to on site, or we would go travel and talk with kids and their parents. And so pulling those insights in, also looking at the competitive landscape, and then marrying that up with the core value of the Lego brick, which is in the brand, which is really about building. And so that's the, you know, those two pieces together, then we would, create concepts and prototypes and put them in front of kids and test and iterate and, you know, your standard design thinking process, but, always first, looking at the user and particularly the kids, they can be, if you have an experience that isn't very fun, they can tell you right away. Sure. So they can be brutally honest, which is a great guide in our development process.
Yeah. Very cool. So what did you enjoy most about living international?
I loved, the proximity to travel. I love traveling all around, Europe and beyond, I think, and the work-life balance focus really supported that sure. time. Yeah. So those were in the Danish culture in particular, there's a lot of good things to take away from it. I think it's now become popular, the notion of hygge, which is like cozy. So people have like candles and things to talk about, you know, being cozy. And that's really derived from Denmark when it's dark and cold in the winter and you need to have blankets and candles to be hygge. Being immersed in that culture and then being able to travel was really wonderful.
Okay. Yeah, we can relate to that in Minnesota, dark and cold in the winter. Yeah. and I think you've answered maybe part of this question. Outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Yes, I think definitely explore the areas that I'm around. So when living in Denmark, it was around Europe. And then, like I said, mentioning in the Bay Area, this has been, I think there you can drive 4 hours in any direction and you're either in mountains or wine country or the coast. It's the Redwoods. We went to the Redwoods a few weekends ago. So really a diverse landscape. I run yoga, recently started playing tennis. And then I think, you know, before we started talking, you saw I have a little Yorkshire Terrier that loves to go on all the adventures as well. So he keeps me busy too. Yeah.
So parting advice you would give to a new leader?
Yes. I think don't take yourself too seriously and stay curious.
Great. Well, this has been fun, Melissa. Definitely your CEO introduced us. She was on the podcast some time ago and definitely enjoyed meeting you and definitely wish you continued success at Willow and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.